Hey listeners, Lex on the Decks here. Before you get stuck into this episode of Hot Girls, I wanted to let you know about something else you may be interested in. Though Hot Girls in its podcast format isn't releasing new episodes any longer, if you head over to my Substack, which is lexonthedecks.substack.com, you'll find more interviews and insight on gender minority artists and how to overcome any barriers to entry. You'll also get the opportunity to sign up to my weekly newsletter, 5 Good Things. This is an email letter which will land in your inbox on Fridays, sharing 5 of my favourite cultural or creative discoveries of the week. You'll find all that on lexonthedecks.substack.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Hot Girls. Hello guys, and welcome to Hot Girls with me, Lex on the Decks. This week I am joined by the very brilliant and focused Blue Lab Beats, a production duo comprised of NKOK and David, aka Mr. DM. Having released their first EP in 2016, they've gone on to work with talent like Moses Boyd, Nubia Garcia, Koji Radical, and Sampa the Great. I was fascinated in how they'd come together as a duo and how they've approached their careers to be carving out the space they are. Being able to flex their musical abilities across a fusion of genres, they've also been proactive in trying to encourage more women to get into music production, which if you don't know is one of the biggest gaps when it comes to gender imbalance in the industry. The guys were super open about their journey and what they're prepping for, so let's get into it. Blue Lab Beats on the Hot Girls podcast. Let's go.
Ladies, listen up. You're listening to Hot Girls. With Lex on the Decks.
We in the mix.
It's fire.
Keep it going. We on fire.
From London for the world.
Let's go in.
Welcome to the Hot Girls podcast. It's actually really nice to have you on this season because Mel Brown was on season one. And so that was the first time I think I heard your name because she mentioned that you did a remix of hers. So it's nice now we're having you on this season. So I actually want to start with talking about remixes. And you've done quite a few of them. How do you approach them and how do you decide what to work on when it comes to remixing a track?
I guess for us, we mainly listen to the original song's arrangement and then we're like, okay, cool, this song was in this pocket. And then like, how can we make this song our own version, basically, and not with our own twist? Then listening to the original song even more and being like, okay, so that song suits festivals more, or it suits clubs more, or it suits more personal sides. It's like, okay, where can we take this? Can we take this more club or more festival or more this? You know, so it's picking out what the song, well, not missing, but like where else it could go, basically. And just like really venture in a more different headspace of that, really.
When it comes to those sorts of things, when you're working on another track, are you generally quite aligned as a pair in terms of where you want it to go?
For me and David, we always kind of have like a set thing whenever we go in studio sessions where, for me, I'm the arranger, beat maker, drum programmer, sound designer. So I do all the electronic side, where David then...
I do the instruments, like live instrumentation, and the harmonic side, the melodic side sometimes, and the bass lines on my side.
And then that's how we both work together so well. Because it's like parts where I can't do like playing chords like how David does. And then like David, it's hard, more hard for you for like just the technical sound design, basically.
Yeah. You know,
so then that's how we both pair so well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you chat me through your like individual journeys? Just kind of, I don't mind who goes first, but like how you got into music up until the point where you came together.
Well, I actually started on djembe percussion when I was age 6. And then like my dad just only played like West and South African music in my house. And then like my mum wanted me to listen to that same thing. She was also a DJ in the 90s. So she played a lot of rare groove as well. And like West Coast hip hop, like even when I was younger. So I know she's like, you have to. And then like,
I love that your mum had an angle, like she had a point of view on what you were going to listen to.
Yeah. No, both of them. Like it was very much like for my dad, it was like, you're listening to your roots. And then my mum was like, you're just listening to that realness. Like, so I was playing djembe quite a lot from age 6 to about 9, 10. And then around like when I got into secondary school, I hated it. So then my parents then homeschooled me because they were like, we want our son to have actual education, actual black education, instead of the washed upness of the Western world, mm-hmm. basically. So like in my homeschooling, then I was learning basically like, okay, this tribe made this sound, which then influenced this side of the world, and then this and then this. So then with all of that knowledge, by age 12, I then wanted to visit back into music, started doing music production from there. And then a year later, me and David met at a place called Weekends Arts College.
Whack Arts.
Yeah, Whack Arts, Weekends Arts College. And then I was playing my beats in the lunch hall. And then David walked past, was sure. like, yo, this is yeah. fire. Like, you know, I'm rehearsing down there. And I checked out his rehearsal and was like, this guy's just picked up, you know, he was on drums and then he was on bass and then keys and then guitar. And I was like, yo, I've got to work with this guy. And then the rest was history, really.
That's such a fame experience, as in fame. Like, I was just playing my beats in the lunch hall.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And then, David, what was your journey up until that point where you walked through the canteen?
Yeah, so when I was about 2 or 3 years old up until now, so I started with drums and then I started on piano age 4. I would have like consistent piano lessons from the age of 5 up until 9 years old. And then I started picking up guitar and bass from age 10 to 12. When I was in college, from college to university. So while I was going from college to university, from the age of 17 to 18, I was also attending various jam sessions in the city. While I was going to Middlesex University and Barnet College, I was also simultaneously going to jam sessions at night. And then I'd get home at like 3 a.m. in the morning. So even though I was learning stuff at college and uni, so the actual real education was at jam sessions, such as the Haggerston, there's also Ronnie Scott's, there's Troy Bar in East London. There was also W3 that was in Ravenscourt Park in West London. And yeah, that was in the year of, what, early 2012 or something. Also, I was going to Whack Arts as well. That's where I met Namali. And as he said, he was playing his stuff in the lunch hall. And yeah, our paths crossed. And then a year later, the rest is history.
So was it a year later that you came together as Blue Lab Beats?
By then, it was... We called ourselves NKOK Mr. DM.
Yeah.
And then we were doing production for Age of Luna, basically. So that was old school hip-hop band that I was in from age, I believe age, like, I just turned like 15 then, age 14, 15 to age 17. And then by age 17, I was like, I just want to do instrumental music. It's just a thing that just happens in bands, really. Just like everyone just wants to go separate ways and stuff.
Yeah, particularly as you're like, as you develop and evolve as a musician, you hear new sounds and that then influences your taste.
That was like 3 to 4 years period, like, that we made that decision. It didn't affect how me and David work, basically, because we've worked together for nearly 9 years, but like, we have near enough the same playlist.
Taste.
Yeah. And like, it's like very, very nuts how similar we are in like a lot of aspects and stuff, really. And it's really rare to to have that, and we both recognize it. But like, the main thing is like, we both recognize, like, okay, especially in studio sessions, because that's when, like, around that time period, it's like, oh, okay, like, there's a lot of bumping heads and stuff where, like, me and Dave were just like, okay, we know how this, like, we both know how to work together. That's the main thing. And like, just, yeah, like, no BS or anything, basically. So,
yeah, the space that you're in now,
yes,
like, does it have a name, the studio space you're in? Because so obviously people are listening, they can't see, but you guys have this like really nice, quite original design studio, and it's blue. And I was like, this is kind of part of the branding. And it's obviously in a lot of your social stuff. So yeah, I was wondering how long you've been working in that space.
Well, so this is the Blue Lab Mark II. Mark I was in my bedroom when I used to live in Golders Green. And this is now, you know, in Enfield Ends, really, now. And it's just a studio shed, basically. But before moving, I saved up loads so then I could have really good acoustic panels so then I can record anything in here. So, like, I've recorded live drums in here. I've recorded multiple horns. I can probably do strings in here too. Not like an orchestra, but like, yeah, like I can record like a good amount of strings in here. You could probably fit like a 4-piece band in here. and it sound good. But mainly, this space really is mainly an editing space for me. So like whenever I come back from big studio sessions, instead of booking an extra 2 days at an expensive studio, I can just come here and edit all night. Because like, yeah, luckily when we moved here, there was like near enough soundproofed. I don't know why, but it just was. And yeah, it's just like, I think, yeah, before lockdown, it was just so beautiful just bringing, like I'll go to a gig and then I would know most of the bandmates at the gig. And then be like, hey, come to studio. And then like, we'll just be making music till like, you know, 7 a.m. So yeah, it was massive vibes, yeah.
Did you use much of that music? Or did you wake up the next day and be like, this isn't good? Why did we think this was good?
Yeah, no, a lot of the time, actually. Yeah, it's because, yeah, it's good musicians. Like, and it's like a lot of them close friends. I always, yeah. I think it's so important to, yeah, just like really know your like musical bubbles and stuff. Just don't get into beef because there's no point.
Yeah.
There's no point. London's too small.
Yeah. No, it can be weirdly small sometimes, can't it?
Yeah.
It sounds like you're both night owls as well. Like you both work quite late. Always. Both smiling.
From the pandemic, I've been like, I've slept better. I've understood sleep more. When we went to Ghana, them lot don't sleep. Wow. Them lot don't sleep at all. Oh my God, my people don't sleep. Wow.
Even I love that you just said, I've understood sleep.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It wasn't natural. You had to learn it.
I mean, no, but that's like, yeah, as a musician, like, you know, sometimes there's a lot of crazy deadlines. Rest is very important, though. I'm not one of those people like grind or die. You know, it's just like, because I hate them kind of quotes a lot. Because like, it's important to have a good space for your mental health too, and sleep really improves that as well. You know, so especially learning that in pandemic. But you know, Ghana is a different story. But anyway, like, you know,
I know you've mentioned musical bubbles, and we had Lynn and Jay on in the last series and spoke about the work that he'd done to try and support female producers. Now you guys have done a lot of work in that space as well. Did you notice when you were kind of coming up and working in production circles, and as she said, like having bandmates back to your studio, was it always male, and did you notice that?
From like early stages of Blue Lab, we've always tried to include women musicians in our stuff. I mean, like, yeah, even Pineapple, we had Nuria. Well, yeah, most of the horn players. Yeah, most of the horn players are that. So that, and then one of the members of Kokoroko, Richie, who plays on Pineapple. And then we had Nabaya on multiple Blue Lab joints. Pina Colada and Richie again. We've just always made sure that we include the women in the music as well, because it's such a male dominated industry, and especially the way how in like kind of typical jazz standard stuff always tries to move women out of it, because it's just like, actually it's more of a male thing. You're like, that doesn't make sense. Hello, Billie Holiday. Anyway, you know, it's just like, and yeah, it's just that. And then obviously, you know, one of my favorite composers ever, so, you know, Alice Coltrane, you know, it's just like, I think her work is extremely, extremely underrated. And just like some of the best spiritual jazz stuff, like ever, really. Like, we've always just wanted just to support, really, because we always have like just open discussions, especially I think the past 2 years for me, like I've had more discussions with bigger women producers and just hearing their stories and just being like, you know what? I just need to spread word more. Just all of these stories. And it's just like, it's not the vibe.
I think it's good though, because what I really like about what you guys have done is just always just been really proactive in both raising awareness of the fact, because I do think that's important, but also, as you say, just trying to be advocates for it and make sure you're kind of supporting the equality and trying to kind of move the dial forward. So appreciated. One incredible woman that you've worked with is Sampa the Great, and many, many others. And you've worked with some incredible artists and collaborated with some amazing people. Are there some that have been particular highlights for you personally that you would kind of call out without obviously taking a shine off the others, because you've had amazing ones? But
yeah, Sampa the Great, that's still one of my favorite sessions till this day, because just the amount of knowledge you're just hearing from this incredible artist, incredible musician, and just the knowledge she just passes down, all the gems, really. just the vibe in like studio sessions, like she just really lets you just do your thing and that's it. And then it's like, then she'll come back in the room and she like really hypes everyone. And it's like, you just feel like you're making the best track ever. Whenever she's in the room, you're always feeling that. Then she gets in a little corner. She writes really insanely fast. She writes rap verses in like 20 minutes.
Finished song.
Yeah, yeah. She writes a rap verse in 20 minutes. I was like, I've never seen this in my life. Like,
that is mad.
Yeah. Like it was like that was an experience, especially the track Next that we did with her. She freestyled that chorus.
Yeah.
Like she was in the booth. She was punching in the last line for the first verse. And then she just freestyled the chorus. And then she was like, actually, I wrote a chorus, but this is it now.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's mad.
I know when NK was producing, I remember standing up in one corner of the room, NK was producing it. And while I was watching him, I was watching Sampo write the lyrics on her phone. And then I looked at NK again. And then I see like a whole dissertation worth of words on her phone. She was scrolling and it was like literally, well, I don't know how many hundred words, but it's ridiculous. Yeah, the work ethic is scary.
It's like I couldn't even copy out words that fast.
Yeah,
do the creative mindset. If it had been terrible, what would you have said?
We all walked out. No, I'm joking.
I love that you freestyled. It's cool, but it's not working.
Yeah. Just walk out. Wow, man. It was just such an incredible session, honestly. Who else? Adeline. So, we did a remix for her, Just Another Day, even though it was all on email and stuff like that. That was a real big vibe doing that remix, definitely. And like much appreciated for thinking of us to do it as well. She's just such an incredible musician as well. So, so, so talented. Yeah, she was great to work with as well. But yeah, Sampa's session still to this day is one of my favourites, definitely.
Do you have a preference in terms of how you work with people when it comes to actually producing original material? You said sometimes, you know, you use your space that you're in now as like an editing room, and sometimes you prefer to go to a studio maybe to record something. Or are you quite happy for people to send you samples, send you vocal samples and kind of work with those? Like, do you think there's a recipe to...
I prefer to be in the same room with the artist. I know that, like, there's a lot of artists that prefer you to send the beat before, but I really don't like that because, like, I just want to create something, like, exactly just for you.
Interaction.
Yeah, and it's like, I want to sense your vibe, everything, so then I'm actually making the song for you instead of it just being just, like, a copy-paste song. And it's like, oh yeah, you sent this. Okay, cool, that sent that. Okay, song's done. It's just like something doesn't really feel, it just doesn't rock with me right at all.
They're both in the room because you can feed off each other's energy and that.
Yeah, I mean, like this pandemic is like, it's taught me and David such mad stuff with recording. Like we've done whole string sections remote for the tracks getting released next year. We've done whole string sections remote. And like it was such a headache. But at the same time, I learned like you can have a really big sounding mini orchestra by doing that as well. And it's so much cheaper to do. Like so much cheaper. But it's like, it's kind of like, I would say near enough the same quality if you're guessing an actual orchestra thing. But an actual orchestra thing, you're looking to spend $5,000 to $7,000, and it's like people don't have that for one song.
Sorry if this is a, you know, basic sort of entry level production question. Not sorry. When you say that in terms of like orchestrating an entire string section, is there kind of someone who's coordinating that? It's like you approach them and say, I want these kind of instruments, or do you go to one person who you know can play all those instruments? Like, how does that come together? Because obviously, an orchestra, you're like, okay, I've booked the orchestra, they're already a team.
Yeah. That's okay, it. So with that, we got a very legendary person called Steve Hussey. Who worked with, he did string arrangements for a few Soul to Soul tracks, basically.
Okay.
So what he does is he conducts and he writes all the parts as well. Normally you have a person who writes the scores and then you have the conductor. So he does both, basically. We got him to do that plus musical direction, so MDing, which then is him getting the string players. So then, because it was remote, he had to be so detailed with every single note. And even if one person sent back something and it was slightly sloppy, they had to do the whole thing again.
Start over.
Yeah.
Scratch it. Go again.
Yep. We're paying you. Do it right. Yeah. I'm joking.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the business side of music and how you guys have found that. So if my chronology is correct, you signed your first publishing deal a couple of years ago. Is that
yes.
right? And then
Damn.
You signed a
okay, license- yes, yeah.
yeah. And then you signed a licensing deal last year. And that was
yes.
that was a really big moment for you guys. How did things change for you when you signed, and how did you get signed in the first place?
So getting signed to Blue Note, which is the biggest jazz label in the world, how we got signed to that was we released and produced and remixed 50 singles, 50 singles for other artists and our own stuff. So this is Blue Lab and my own solo stuff as well. So, or other projects, sorry. Blue Lab and other projects. That's, we've done about 6 EP worth of music and then 4 to 5 albums worth, and that's all released.
Fair to say you guys aren't work shy.
Yeah. You know, and that's the stuff that's released. The best way to say it's like when you see one single from an artist, you know, like for Blue Lab, we have a release nearly every single month for the past like 5 years or something like that. Yeah. Or 4 years. Three, 4 years. We've had a release like every single month. And how we've recognized that is because we know, like, we're like, okay, the Spotify algorithm hates people waiting. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, we've got to just keep on giving. And also as creatives, it's fun to just release stuff as well. But the important part of the releasing side is you have a good label backing you. Mm. And even before that, because obviously we can speak about label. Before that, you've got to have a good management team, or you just have a team around you that believes in you. And also it's like they can criticize your stuff. So then it's like, okay, cool, I can improve on this. I can improve on this. It's important to have criticism too with your music, you know. So, so important, because then you can improve, and then it's like, all right, cool. Strengthen your sound even more.
I suppose as well, it's like a fresh ear. You know, you spend so much time listening and crafting and working on something that someone else who has none of that context of what you've built and how you've built it is going to hear something so differently.
Oh, yeah. Like, we've played demos of stuff like we're like, okay, about. And then he's gone, this is amazing. And we're like, what? Okay, cool, we'll finish it. and then it's the other way around where we'll play something and he goes, it's nice. You're like, what? It's like, yes, yeah, it's all right, but like, I prefer the other thing, you know? Yeah, it's just, it's you. Yeah, it's like a manager's basically the best friend that kicks your ass, basically. But then it's just like, you know that, like, you're both in the same bubble of thinking, you know? Mm. But it's not too similar, but it's like, it's still that mutual thing of like, actually, it's so beneficial and I'm so grateful for having that there.
After you signed with Blue Note, like, did you do anything special that evening, or did you just go to sleep and be like,
Yeah, a few champagnes. That's and then, like, birthday, yeah. Actually, and then, yeah, it was his
oh, was it?
Yeah.
I signed it on.
So your dad's like, that's cool, but it's my birthday.
Yeah, it was literally, you know, that Earth, Wind & Fire song, September, innit? He was here. He was actually born on the 21st night of September. Coincidence.
And that was when he signed.
Yeah.
Does he play that song every birthday? Hey?
He does.
looks around at everyone.
Yeah, it's me. They wrote this for me.
Yeah.
I have a friend who has the same birthday, and she does the same. She does the same thing. Uses that to soundtrack it in every time it comes around.
That's just like every Instagram story, every Snapchat story. Just that's from the whole day.
Yeah. So you had some champagnes, and then I guess it's back to work. How much of the first release and the work that you put out with them had you done before you signed? Because sometimes people have, you know, sometimes like they sign to a label and then the label's like, it's cool what you've done, but we think you can do better, so we're going to start.
We released Montara. We did that cover for Blue Note Reimagined. Basically, when they heard the demo for that, when Blue Note France heard the demo for that, they were like, oh my God, we've got to sign Blue Lab Beats. We have to. Then, yeah, like I just wanted to explore more of like the other parts of the deal as well. Mm. So we're not on a record deal, it's a licensing deal. And I would just, for people listening, especially, strongly, strongly advise you looking into what licensing deals are, because it's, I would say, the kind of new way of signing. It's just a lot more freedom and just like, yeah, a lot more vibes, definitely. You know, just, yeah, just a lot better.
More vibes.
Yes, more vibes, yeah.
How much of the music that you released with them had you done?
Yeah, so we did Montara. The French side of the label loved it. Then we were going to just sign to the French side originally, and then the American side of Blue Note then were like, okay, let's do this independently. Independent license deal. Okay, cool. This is amazing. Then we signed to that. And then we had, yeah, basically we had an EP. Like we were originally thinking of releasing it just ourselves. And then Blue Note then offered this, basically. And we were happy just to do it ourselves anyway. And then Blue Note just came through and we were just like, yo, this is insane. Wow. Now we're just making more and more music, really. It's like with Blue Note and them understanding the Spotify algorithm and just like music algorithm now, mm-hmm. they're like, this is great. So you're going to record more now. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. Cool.
I find it really interesting that you said, and thanks for being so open, it's cool, that you said that you release like every month. And I think that's just really interesting, yeah, for people to hear and kind of get a sense of cadence. People like might be like super stressed about their first release or whatever. It's like from Blue Lab Beats Per Sex, which is just get it out because you've got to do another one.
It's so understandable to be perfectionist, especially in creative area. You know, I think a good remedy for, especially if you're having writer's block or if you're stressed out of a deadline because you don't think your track doesn't sound there compared to this, is always remember that after that first release, you can write another experience. And then after that release, you write another experience again, because music is a live through form. You know, whatever you've lived through, basically you write it down like songwriting, or you produce it, but have the same mindset of like what you just lived through, basically. Mm-hmm. And then you're documenting that, and then that's the recording. And then you want to then release that. You'll never run out of ideas, because I think that's what people always get scared of. It's like, oh yeah, after album this or this, you run out of ideas. And at the start of making another album, yes, you do. You feel like that. you really do. But then there's a part that always clicks in, just being like, oh yeah, this is another experience. I don't have to compete with my last record. Mm. It's another experience. Life just changes all the time. That's the beauty of it. So then you're just capturing that again and then releasing that again.
So as we're talking now, you're just finishing up quarantine, having been in Ghana. What took you to Ghana and what did you get up to whilst you were there?
We shot two music videos there and we did a photo shoot there. And we also worked with one of Wizkid's producers as well, and many other studio sessions too. We mainly went there because we're experimenting more with Afrobeats in a lot of our newest stuff. So our newest single, Blow You Away. So we've been experimenting more on that side. We were just like, you know what? We actually need to just go to Motherland to film these songs, because the whole ruling system with like, oh yeah, you need to be, you know, socially distanced in certain videos or blah. Some people don't care. Yeah, they don't care with that. But like,
well, yeah, because they're like, we're working. So.
Something like that. But like in January, they were like, oh yeah, let's sort out videos. And obviously in UK, January was the worst spike for us for COVID. So I was like, I don't want to even leave the yard. Like, you know, it was a very nuts month. Like, yeah. So it was the thing of, we were like, okay, what's a better alternative instead of having, because they were like, oh yeah, let's get a bunch of dancers in the video as well. And then it was just like, what? And they have to be socially distanced. This, I'm like, I just,
it's not really the energy concept of Afrobeats, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
They
yeah.
can't it's really like, engage.
Yeah, it's just like, I hated that idea so much. And then we were just like, okay, cool. Let's see what Ghana's saying. Ghana's like nearly COVID free. Like there's only 700 deaths of the entire year in Ghana out of, I think it's like 30 million population. So they, you know, they did absolutely incredible. Yeah. You know, but what they did, they had a two and a half, I think it's 2 to 2.5 month lockdown, strict lockdown. You could visit, they could see some family within a small group of like 4 to 6 or something. But because of how, you know, like in West Africa, like the tropical diseases and stuff happen, you know, about once every 2 year or something, or like, or just like very, like the very, very small ones. Like when they heard COVID, they were like, okay, cool, we know the drill. Everyone just stay in. And then on top of that, then I think they shut airports for like a couple months as well. Mm-hmm. In Ghana, so that's why they completely smashed it. Yeah, a lot of stuff is normal there as well.
Yeah,
like I was clubbing out there. Yeah, I was clubbing out there. Yeah.
And how was that? How did it feel? Did it feel like, is this allowed? You know?
Yeah, no, it was crazy. It was insane because like I heard, you know, Afro beats, but in motherland.
Were they playing like Afro beats in the club?
So there's in Ghana, I mean, this is where I wanted to go as well, because I was just like, so I'm like, I'm doing Afro beats, but I want to see what's really popping in motherland as well.
Also, because you know, whatever, I feel like that's where the culture kind of comes from there, like the music, the sound, the newest sounds are going to start over there. And so that makes total sense to be ahead of the curve of what's going to be popular.
Yeah. So like, for example, Ghanaians, there's Ghanaian drill. And with Ghanaian drill, they don't call it Ghanaian drill. It's a different name, basically. But each tribe in Ghana, so Ashanti, and then more south side of Ghana, they all have different versions of Ghanaian drill. Where in UK, everyone has the different ends, but it's still drill. Where, like, for example, in Ashanti region, Kumasi, or like Agogo, you know, it's like you're having more trap hi-hat, you know, drill hi-hat stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, normal drill stuff. But then the 808s are doing absolutely crazy musical stuff, like insane musical stuff. And then more like south Ghana, like Accra, then they might add more percussion or more mm-hmm. this and this. So then the sound changes in different parts of Ghana with their drill, basically. And even the flows and like how they did, like the deliveries and everything. So that's that. And then like me and David heard dancehall and Afrobeats artists collaborating there, and Bashman and Afrobeats artists collaborating. And then people from east side of Africa then join it, like working west side of Africa. The musical like genres that I was hearing there, and all of them having such separate names and everything. I was like, this is incredible. And especially in the clubs and stuff, it sounded unbelievable. And the way people were just dancing there, I was like, this is mad.
How did it feel coming back to London, particularly because it's so grey at the moment, and just kind of, were you like, and then going back into quarantine, were you like, that was a movie, and now we're...
You know the thing as well, it's like, obviously, the completely different standard of food and how fresh all the food is there.
Yeah.
The drink as well.
Yeah, and like, yeah, just...
Fanta as well.
Yeah, like, even like, just random stuff like Fanta is completely different in Ghana.
Is it sweeter?
Yes.
Or is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
The face. Yes.
Yeah. Like, just everything's just like, it's just so nuts then. Like, cause yeah, we had like an Airbnb there. So I got like a lot of, you know, fresh veg and just like all the herbs and everything, especially ginger and scotch bonnet is like a completely different story. And like, just a bunch of, like, they have like a lot of mixed dry herbs as well, you know, they'll be selling, you know, side of the road or something, or like in a like local store or something, and like they do that a lot. It's just the most amazing tasting stuff, like, for real. Mm. Just the people are so warming, and like the younger generation so knowledgeable, it's actually unreal. Just like politically, just everything is like so beautiful to see that. And just seeing like younger gen just being like, oh, we really want to be creatives and like this and this, and kind of breaking that kind of traditional thing of like, oh, you have to be this or this or this sort of thing, which just like in much more older generation it's that, but for younger generation it's like kind of breaking that. So that's really beautiful to see. Obviously capturing all of that vibe and then coming back here. That's basically the best way to explain it. I mean, it was, you know, obviously I had fun, subtle racism as well in the Uber driver back, which was fun. It was just like, you must have come from a red COVID country. I'm like, no, I just came from a country that's doing better than UK.
Yeah, you're like, definitely, actually, no. Yeah.
Yeah, like, and who was she like? Because obviously, if you come from a red COVID country, you have to go to a separate hotel. Which, like, if I'm being honest, is a really outrageously, like, just dumb system. It makes no sense to me because it's like you're possibly giving the driver COVID. Where, like, in Ghana, I mean, this is the thing. When you land in Ghana, you have to get a test. You have to get an automatic test straight away. And then if you're tested positive, they have a separate place in the airport. There's a separate route. It's so much safer.
Properly contained.
Yeah. So much safer. And yeah, they take it so seriously. Even when you, when you're going to the shopping malls, you know, you have to wear masks and sanitize your hands from entry. And then when they give you a shopping trolley, then they sanitize that before giving it to you. And then when you get to the counter, then the person sees you, then they sanitize their hands and then passes you the food, then sanitize their hand again.
It's like a different attitude, isn't it?
Oh, holds, yeah.
There's like an arrogance in the West where we like don't expect to be affected by things, or so we just, it's just not take, like, you're right, it's just not taken seriously.
It's just a whole different vibe. And obviously Ghanaian work ethic is just, just West African, African work ethic is so different. Like, we shot our videos, 2.5 weeks ago?
2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2.5 weeks ago. We got
different locations.
Yeah, several different locations. One of the videos was a 2-day shoot. We've done 2 videos 2.5 weeks ago. We get the final edits color graded today.
If you tried to do that in the UK, people would be like appalled.
For UK to get one video done. Like, for you to even ask for an edit takes a week. So it's just like, you know, we're doing edits, and then it's like, we're like, oh yeah, can we have this? And then it's like, the person's on the line whilst we're doing the edits. That's how quick it is. I was like, what? Like, person's like, okay, cool. Yeah, let me just do that. Literally just doing that. Okay, cool. I sent you something. Just let me know. I'm going to just be on the lines, you know, just like literally. And then
once you review it.
Yes. And then it's like, okay, yeah, but there's this as well. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll just do that. Okay, yeah, there's that as well. Just check this.
What are your release plans over the next couple of months? And also particularly, I'm interested, like, if your Afrobeats has like quite a nice like summery sound to it and some of the music. So is there going to be releases? Yeah. What have you got planned over the next couple of months?
Well, yeah, as we've just received one of the music videos from there, basically, that's going to be dropping very, very soon. Then we've got an EP coming out next week, I think? Yeah, next week. So, like, there's been so much, I couldn't even remember.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have had a lot going on. Do you get nervous around still, like, having the release of an EP? Like, it's still a moment because it's a collection of work, you know?
I do a little bit, but then, like, also, it's like I do, but it's like nowhere near. I think it's weird. I get nervous 2 weeks before, 2 or 3 weeks before. And then like nearer the day, I'm hella excited. I'm like, I can't wait for people to listen to this. And I think especially because it's our first release with Blue Note, I'm just still a bit mind blown that really. So like, yeah, like still really, really mind blown with that.
It must be quite a rare feeling. Those people that you've kind of, whether it's a Miles Davis or whoever, those people that you've looked up to and listened to and learned so much from, to feel that kind of kinship with them or to feel that closeness of being you probably don't really feel that, but
with Blue Note, I mean, I can semi drop this. No, I can drop this info because it's not full on info. But like when signing to them, I definitely felt that. I was like, oh my God, this is mad. But then the people who Blue Note are getting us to collaborate with, which are near that area, some of them from Motherland and some of them are like queen of Afropop or Afrobeats. We're collaborating with them at the moment. Can't say who yet. But like, even just that with Blue Note, it's insane. And it's like some of my people who I listened to when I was a kid and just being like, this is actually happening. This is crazy, you know? So yeah, a lot of that happens with Blue Note too. And I just like everyone in the music's really, really musical. And the whole label, they're just so musical. It's not the typical A&R thing of like, I want that snare to sound like Calvin Harris, and you're like, what? You know, it's just like it's none of that. It's literally like the A&R for our stuff. He's like, you know what? It's like they're like, look, this song's good. The kick's got a smack. It's got a smack. Literally, like, I love this guy. He's like, this kick's got a smack. He's like, it's not smacking you. He's like, it's got a smack.
Like, you're like, okay, we can take that. The final thing I just want to ask is, if people are listening, where can they find you guys and follow? What are your favourite social channels that you hang out on? And obviously looking out for the releases on Spotify, etc.
Yes. So you can just follow us on Blue Lab Beats. That's just everything. Blue Lab Beats. All the social medias. Yes.
All the social medias. I see you guys have been, you've been doing TikToks.
Yes, we're trying to understand that market. My God. It's very different. One of our videos started to blow up on that. That was very random. Yeah, so it's like one of our TikToks of us on Cockrobito Beach, basically. That started to really blow up. And then, TikTok, it's a very, very weird community.
It's got its whole own algorithm as well, hasn't it? You're like, why is this being served to me?
And it's always stuff that you didn't even think, was going to be the main thing. So, you would sample a meme and blah, and then you're like, okay, this is TikTok. And then it's just like, actually, it's you sitting down looking at the camera. This is the thing that's blown up, and you're just like, why? And then all the comments underneath are like people who've never heard you before. And because TikTok is a much more visual thing compared to music, if I'm being honest, so then people, well, visual as in like they like to see the models or blah. So then they comment on, I really love what he's wearing. And I'm like, I'm a musical brand. it's like he's wearing this and it's great. And then it's just like, why is he smiling? And it's like, he's smiling because. And you're literally like, what is this? But we have to learn it because, you don't have to, but it's good. Yeah, it's good to know.
It makes sense too. Yeah, it's definitely, I agree. It's good to it's very easy when things are new to be like dismissive of them because it's like they don't necessarily make natural sense. But then this is the future. There is a whole generation on there.
Yeah, because people at one time were like, I don't want to join Instagram.
And down the line, it's like, here we are.
Yeah. Because, I think especially in musicians scene, they're just like, nah, I can't deal with TikTok. And you're like, well, yeah, people said that about Instagram.
Yeah.
And now people have kind of left Facebook and then now on Instagram, And it's like, I don't think it will happen like that with TikTok because TikTok is just a fast-paced video thing and that's just specifically just for them. I think there'll probably be something like a music streaming platform like Spotify, but then is linked with like fast videos like TikTok, but more for dancers. I think something like that could probably happen.
Blue Lab Beats, thank you so much for
thank you.
The Hot Girls podcast this week. I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm super excited to hear the new EP. And also, I feel like you've kind of there was some heavy hinting that there's going to be some big names coming up. So I'm excited to see.
I mean, on the EP. Because we can announce this now. We have Braxton Cook, who he's played with Tom Mishloads. You have DT Soul. He plays with MV, countless others as well in UK R&B. So, yeah, you've got DT Soul.
Koji Radical.
And you have Koji Radical on this EP too. And Alex Blake, who's on WizKids album as well.
I'm really excited to sound it because I'm like, this is just a fusion of sounds. I suppose you've got to that place with your music where you just can play on so many different elements, and depending on who you work with, it's like it allows you to flex into those spaces. So
truly exciting. I can't wait for people to hear it, honestly. So excited.
Thanks for sharing everything, and thank you guys for listening, and we will be back next week. Bye. What up, let's